Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 319. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, can you believe it's already July and we just went past the halfway mark of the season? It's crazy.
No, I can't. It is that is really crazy to think about and really sad at the same time that we're already over halfway done. And before we know it, we will be in Arizona for the AFL. And that's October, end of October. So yeah, man, it's I feel like time goes a little quicker every year. So yeah, it's hard to believe that we are this far in already.
That's all about being in your 30s. That's where once you hit 30, that's like the magical number where it just like moves so much quicker. I know people older than us will be like, oh, wait till you hit 40 or 50. But yeah, it feels like the last few years, like COVID was 4 years ago, like with the canceled season for minor leagues was 4 years ago. Now it's just crazy to think about. In fact, we're already approaching the All-Star break, trade deadlines in a month. We got the draft coming up. But so yeah, a lot of fun things coming up, though. Futures game. A lot of fun things on the horizon here, and still got another half of baseball to be played, and still got a lot of fun names to dive into today. Some prospect promotions, including one major one. We'll talk about some fun young outfielders, a struggling arm that just got optioned, another elite player that's struggling mightily. And of course, on the Monday episode, we got three up, three down for you with some hot or cold hitting prospects. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings. And of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. So much great content across many sports, podcast, betting, you name it. RotoBaller's got it. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout, get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, we'll start out with the promotions and the big one here. It hasn't officially happened yet. It will happen on Monday, but they announced it on, I think it was Friday night. James Wood finally getting the call to the Nationals, both of our number one overall prospect for fantasy here. And he's had just an absolutely phenomenal season in 231 plate appearances, 16 doubles, 10 home runs, 10 steals, nearly as many walks as strikeouts, and a 353, 463, 595 slash line. And just the big thing with him, just dropping that K rate by about 13%. It was like around 31% last year, and it's down to about 18% this year, which is huge. That's the thing I've been most impressed by. Like, we knew he had the massive power. We knew he was a good athlete. We knew he could draw a walk. But just getting that K rate down, and not just down a little bit, down substantially. I'm talking with 12, 13%. That's a massive drop from one season to the next. So that's an incredibly encouraging. That was the real reason why, you know, after Langford graduated a month and a half ago, whatever it was, that's the reason why I put Wood, obviously in addition to his massive upside, at number one. But long-term, Chris, like, what are you thinking for James? Like, how high do you think he's going to rise? Do you think he's going to be a top 10 player? What are your thoughts there?
He's got that upside for sure. I'm not going to sit here and project a prospect to be a top 10 guy, but
right.
Like, if you're looking for the kind of pedigree, that's what you want to see. You want to see a guy that hits the ball as hard as he does. You want to see a guy that can run well. And considering he's 6'7", he runs really well. The exit velocities are insane. It's a 95-mile-an-hour average exit velocity right now. It is a 109, over 109-mile-an-hour 90th percentile, which those are elite numbers. And we knew that he was capable of that. That's just the kind of player that he is. And right now, only Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani would have an higher average EV. He'd be tied with O'Neill Cruz. So that just tells you the kind of power that James Wood has. The question I have is, does he lift it enough? The launch angle is pretty low. There's some ground balls. But the fact that he's improved the contact rate as much as he has is pretty insane. To start the year, I think there were some concerns. But now he's up over 85% end zone contact. He's got 25% chase rate, which is really good. Picking his spots, I think that if there's any prospect to bet on ascending to elite heights, it'd be Wood, just because of the tools. And the fact that he is young, he's big and has long levers, but in the process, he's made major strides with the contact, which is, checks a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I want to see, you know, how he transitions, because obviously he's been more down than up when it comes to some of these big names transitioning to the major leagues this year. I think I've seen Sarah say more than once that just the quality of pitching in terms of stuff has just been not the same as it usually has been in AAA in previous years. So I wonder if that plays into it, that they're not facing quite the same level of pitching this year. So maybe that gap is a little bigger than it usually is. Hard to really say. James Wood, obviously all the upside in the world. We're talking 30-plus home runs annually, potential for 20 steals or at least 10 to 15 through the next 10 years or so. I don't think he's going to stop running anytime soon. And a good OBP as well. And if he can keep that K rate in check and make sure that those gains he's made this year and with contact and in the strikeout department stick, yeah, there's no reason why he couldn't be a first-round player down the road. He definitely has that upside for sure. The other hitter here that got called up a few days ago already has two home runs, though one of them was questionable. That might have been foul, but, hey, it was ruled a home run. So young Kenzie Noel has two through his first five games, but at the same time, he's also struck out seven times and 14 plate appearances, showcasing everything so far. He's had some contact and strikeout issues throughout his minor league career, though that got both of them pretty much improved this year in AAA. He was very potent down there. Massive power, five batted balls with an average EV of 100.3 so far in the major leagues. Small sample size, yes, but just shows the massive power he does have. Max EV already has 115 batted ball in there. I'm still pretty, I'm on the fence with Noel. The power is so massive, but at the same time, I still don't think he's more than like a 240 hitter. Maybe he can get to like Rhys Hoskins levels, but I'm thinking that's maybe best case scenario for him. And worst case is a guy that's back in AAA pretty soon. But what are your thoughts on Noel?
I think it all depends if the changes that he made actually stick, because yep. He made some major changes over the last month or so. He's been rather impressive in ways that I didn't think was possible. He cut the chase rate over 10 percentage points over the last month or so, which has been really notable because he's always been a free swinger, high chase type of guy. But he's cut that, and that's obviously a big stride when you're chasing 45% of the time. not really going to work. And that was what Noel was doing for the first month and a half of the season. It was a chase rate up at 45%. And then you fast forward and look at May 15th onward, which we're splitting month and a half. He's done a 35% chase, 78% contact over that span, 90% end zone contact. I know that those are AAA numbers, but still, like, to see that kind of improvement is huge, especially from someone that hits the ball as hard as he does. And you don't want to put a lot of stock in a 1.5 month sample when we look at the larger career and say, okay, like, he's always been a high chase, like, lower contact type. But he hits the snot out of the ball. He had a 118 mile an hour max, a 109 90th percentile, which is right where James Wood was. The power is right there with what you want to see. And then the fact that he's improved the plate discipline and contact, again, 144 plate appearances we're looking at over that span. Does it stick? I don't know. But I at least am encouraged to see that, where maybe he can hit 260. And if he hits 260, he may hit 30 home runs, which also is a big factor here. And I think that I'm taking a shot on him where I can. I think you just see where it goes and if it actually sticks. And if it doesn't, just turn the spot and move on is where I am at this point. But yeah, it's really been a nice ascent for him so far. So I'm monitoring very closely, adding where I can and hoping that it is legit.
Yeah, and he's a bat that Cleveland really needs. They don't have a lot of bats like him. They have a lot of bats that are on the other end of the spectrum that are more contact and approach first. They don't really have one of those big power bats. Obviously, Joe Ramsey hit for some power, but I think if he were to click, this would be definitely a needed bat for them in the middle of that lineup. So I think he'll get some run here. He's got a couple home runs already, which is nice to see. But yeah, I just want to see where that hit tool lines up long-term. Does he revert back to pre-2023 Noel in terms of the contact and approach? Is it somewhere in the middle, or is he stick? Does gains stick this year? We'll see. But yes, the power absolutely makes him intriguing. So worth a look for that alone. Two pitchers got the call this week as well. David Festa and Hayden Birdsong. We'll start with David Festa. Now, both have already made their MLB debuts. See, Festa went 5 innings, gave up 5 earns for Minnesota. Birdsong allowed 3 earned in 4 2/3. Festa on the season between AA and AAA. Oh, excuse me, that was last year. All AAA this year, got the wrong year. 14 starts, 59 2/3 innings, had a 3.77 ERA, 1.29 WHIP, 87 strikeouts to 24 walks. So dropped the walk rate a little bit, under 10%. And he's always kind of been right around 9-10% there, so right in the same range as usual, and had a very high K rate this season as well, as he always has, at 35.1%. And your WHIP was a little higher at 1.29, but AAA, that's not out of the ordinary there. You know, Chris, I know you've been pretty high on Festa for a long time. What level pitcher do you think we're seeing with, or could see, excuse me, with him long-term?
I think that at least he could be a mid-rotation guy if all clicks. He's got the starter stuff. He checks a lot of boxes as far as arsenal. It's a good fastball. I think it's fastball that plays plus, at least. You know, it's a consistently mid-90s, which you want to see. It's got good ride through the zone. It shows a lot of good traits. And it's the nice thing is I think he mixes his pitches so well with that fastball. The fastball's touched 101 this year, which is crazy. But he's got a big frame. He gets good extension, so it plays up past the 95 miles an hour that it averages. Misses bats. He throws it for strikes pretty heavily, which I think is important. The slider and changeup sit in a similar velo band, but you obviously have pretty distinct movement patterns and good separation between the two. He does land both those for strikes a lot too, which I'm encouraged by, and he misses bats with both. In AAA, it was a 23% swinging strike rate on the changeup and a 21% on the slider. Those are very good marks. And then the strike rates on all of them were north of 63%, which is pretty important too. You know, he does mix a curveball every now and then. It's a very distant fourth offering, but he mixes the fastball, slider, and change pretty evenly, which I think is pretty encouraging. The strike throwing has improved. The walks have trended way down over the last month or so. And I think that it puts him in a good spot. The ABS system obviously killed a lot of arms. So I think to look at the improvements that he made over the last month, it's like, man, this is very notable what we're seeing from David Festa. So I'm pretty in. Obviously, the first start didn't look great on the surface, but I think he showed some good things. And you know, I think that at the end of the day, he's going to be fine long term. Hope he gets a fair shake, and I hope that he can get back on track.
Yeah, I'm fairly high. I think you're higher on me on Festa than I am, but I do agree. I think he could be a decent mid-rotation starter, guy that can miss bats at a pretty good clip, and probably always have an above-average K rate, maybe like a 25 to 27% K rate guy. And even if the walk rate's 9, 10%, you can live with that given the stuff that he does have. He's a guy that I've had, like, I put back in top 100 right now. I think that's a fair spot for him. I think SP3 is good upside there. So I'm a fan. I'm just not going crazy over David Festa, but I do like him a bit more than Hayden Birdsong. Though I do Hayden Birdsong and probably has the nicest sounding last name in the entire minor leagues. But with Hayden Birdsong, good three pitches. He has a changeup too, which isn't that great, but fastball, slider, curve, all can miss bats. But the command and control has been fairly inconsistent with him. He has a walk rate above 10% this year. And for his minor league career, it's not to, you know, alarming levels by any means. And he can miss bats too, 31% K rate this year. Yeah, I think he's more Festus and SP3 upside. I think Birdsong's more SP3/4, like back end SP3, high end SP4. And maybe, honestly, he could be like, I'm not saying that this is a direct comp, but in terms of like value wise long term, if he's in a similar range to Kyle Harrison, being like a top 75, top 80, something like that, SP, I think that's where he's going to end up. And again, I think if you want to go after him, I think he's fine. But you know, I don't think there's immense upside here. I think there's not as much upside as David Festa. I like Festa more. There's a higher ceiling there. But I think there's still a decent arm to be had here with Hayden Birdsong too.
Yeah, Birdsong's interesting. I'm definitely higher on Festa, but that doesn't mean that I don't like Birdsong. I think that he brings some intriguing things to the table. Has more pitches for one, which is, you know, pretty notable. He's going to mix a fastball, change, curve, slider, maybe mix a cutter on occasion. I think it's a pretty interesting arsenal. Fastball does sit around 95, 96, which I think is pretty notable. And having the depth of that arsenal, I think, is also pretty notable too. He obviously dominated in AA to get the push to triple, where he wasn't there very long at all before he got the next bump to the majors. And you know, I don't think that he misses as many bats as Festa, but I do think that Birdsong has some intriguing traits that could make him successful. And the fact that he pitches in San Francisco only is going to help. That's a pretty good park to pitch in. So I really like the profile as like a back-end starter. I think his cost is probably much cheaper. I don't know. We'll see what they go for in Fab, but I like both guys. And I think that even though Festa is the better one, I think that Birdsong is potentially worth investing in.
Yeah, I absolutely agree there. All right, let's shift over to some other major leaguers here and go with that big name we alluded to earlier, Julio Rodriguez. Start off the season poorly. Had a bit of a hot streak, like late May, early June. People thought, like, all right, here comes J-Rod. He's back. But I've been struggling the last couple of weeks. And just overall, it's been a rough season for Rodriguez. Who would have thought that J-Rod would have, in over half a season, 84 games, 355 plate appearances, a 248, 299, 329 slash line, and have the fourth lowest ISO among the 144 qualified hitters right now? The only three lower than J-Rod are Sal Frelick, Luis Arraez, and Joey Meneses. Lower than J-Rod's 082 ISO. He's behind. See, he's behind Nico Horner, Jeff McNeil, Leary Taveras, Jose Caballero, and even Corbin Carroll has higher ISO this season. So I wonder who's been, before we get to J-Rod, who's been a bigger disappointment so far this year, J-Rod or Carroll, Chris?
Both, but maybe J-Rod, because at least people assume that Carroll's hurt. You know, nobody's assuming that about J-Rod. It's just been pretty bad across the board, which is weird to look at because, like, he's still hitting the ball really hard. Like, you look at the metrics and, yeah, the barrel rate's down, the average EV's down, but it's still, like, pretty upper tier. But the bat at ball distribution's, like, just changed with him. It's been hard to watch. He's whiffing more. He's striking out more. It's not been ideal. There was actually a question posed in the Dynasty Dugout Discord earlier today, and it said, who finishes the year with a higher slug, Jackson Merrill or Julio Rodriguez? J-Rod's currently at a 327 slug, and I calculated, for him to even get his slug up to 450 this year, in the second half, he would need 20 homers and 30 doubles at minimum. So that's a really big second half. Considering
I'm gonna take the under there.
Yeah. So I would say he's hard pressed to push the slug over 400, which is wild. And meanwhile, Jackson Merrill, who we're gonna talk about, is absolutely mashing. He's got the slug up to 464. But J-Rod, man, what is going on here? I think that it's fair to question this point. Like, how high should we have Julio Rodriguez in the rankings? Seeing the ball on the ground more in every year, every season, the ground ball rate has trended upward. And in the process, it's okay, less fly balls. Also, way less pulled balls. His pull percentage is down 9 percentage points from last year. That's obviously notable because you're going to get to less power to the opposite field. So yeah, I think you got to look at that and you're like, why? The zone contact rate's down 4 percentage points. The overall contact rate down 3 percentage points. He's chasing at a high clip. I don't know, man. It's kind of weird to look at and figure out what in the world is actually going on with Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, I don't think it's not like one thing. It's not like, oh, you look at this one metric. Oh, look, there's the issue there. I think it's a lot of metrics adding up that are the problem. Like you mentioned a few of them already, the ground ball rate, the chase rate, zone contact's gone down about 4 percentage points. And to add, like, he's just super aggressive in general. Look at, you know, walk rates below average mark at 6.2%. K rate just ticked up to 27%. Neither one of those are terrible, but they're both below average by 2% for the walk rate and about 5% for the K rate. Then you look at first pitch swing rate. He's about all 3 years, he's been around 9 to 12% above league average in terms of swinging on the first pitch. Overall swing rate, he's about 6 to 7% above league average. Whiff rate is 7% above league average. There's a lot of things here. Chase rate super high, 37.5%, which is basically the same mark it was last year. So I think all these things encapsulated into one is really the issue here. And he's still on pace for 14 home runs and 34 steals. So he's got that going for him. But yeah, the slash line is rough, to say the least. The power, well, it's still there. And he's probably one of the few hitters in baseball right now to have bat speed and sprint speed in the 95th percentile or better. That doesn't always translate to, especially when you mentioned the ground, super high ground ball rate, the lower pull rate. It's just a lot of things. And obviously, it's not time to write him off as potential return to top five status at some point, but I don't think it's going to be this year. I think there's a lot of things he has to tinker with, and that's hard to do in season. It's hard enough to do in general, especially in seasons. I think this is more of an off-season work on the swing thing, get into the lab, get into the facilities, and kind of work on things, and maybe we'll see a bounce back from him next year. But I think what you're seeing from Rodriguez this year is pretty much what you're going to get. I'm not expecting some massive turnaround here in the second half. Maybe he ticks up a little bit, but I don't expect him to return to the 2022-2023 J-Rod. I don't think that guy is walking through that door right now, unfortunately. But a couple of outfielders, Chris already mentioned one name here, a couple of young outfielders, both of the first name starting with J, Jackson Merrill from the San Diego Padres and Jaron Duran from my Boston Red Sox are both really surging this season, especially lately. We'll start with Jackson Merrill here, Chris, who has been on like a power surge out of nowhere. I think he had 3 home runs the first, 11 weeks of the season or whatever. Now he's at 9 over the last few weeks. He's up to 12 home runs, 9 steals right now in 307 play appearances. So he's got a shot at going 2020 this year with a 294, 328, 464 slash line. And we look at the Savant page outside of, he's got a little bit of a higher chase rate, doesn't walk much. He only walks 4.5% of the time. Everything else is pretty good. Like, nothing like stands out in terms of huge EVs or anything like that, but he's above average across the board for quality of contact. Only strikes out 15.8% of the time. Ground ball rate's fine. It's around 43%. And he has 87.6% zone contact, 81.3% overall contact. He just chases a little bit too much, but a lot of good here. just across the board does a lot of things well. So I think this is legit. I don't know if he's going to be a 20 steal guy. He never really looked like that in the minor leagues. Though, could he be 12 to 15? Sure. And maybe even goes closer to 20 this year. But I think he's a 20, 25 homer bat with a decent average, a little bit lower OBP because of that lower walk rate. But a lot of good here. So I'm mostly buying into the Merrill we've seen this year. Maybe not this level of power over the last few weeks from Merrill. But overall, maybe a 20, 15 type of bat. I think I'm buying that for sure.
Yeah, I think he's every bit legit. He's so young still. Turned 21 earlier this year, and he's very impressive. And it's not like, if you look at the spray chart, what I love is that he hits the ball to all fields extremely well. His home runs are distributed evenly. It's not just he's pounding him to the poolside. Like, he's got home runs to center. He's got home runs to oppo. Like, for a 21-year-old, that's pretty good power. And we've always known that Jackson Merrill can hit the ball hard. His EVs have always been pretty good dating back to the early minor league days. It was just the fact that he hit the ball on the ground way too much. He's fixed that to an extent. A 43% ground ball rate will play, especially when you're hitting 30% fly ball and 25% line drive. Like, that's really solid. And you pair that with really elite contact. It's 88% in zone. It's near 82% overall. Like, those numbers are really good. Not striking out. Sure, he doesn't take a walk, but I don't really care because he's aggressive. He's putting the balls in play. And honestly, I don't even think it matters because he jumps pretty early in counts, which I'm good with. His first pitch swing rate is 13% higher than the league average. That's great to see. His overall swing rate's higher than league average. And at the end of the day, if you're making contact, that's what matters. But I'll tell you what I really like is that meatball swing rate, really good, 83%. Like, pitches in the heart of the zone, he's identifying and hitting. I just look at this well-rounded profile and say, all right, Merrill can run. Merrill can make contact. He's versatile, man. He's an infielder playing center field and outfield right now, and it's working. Do I think he goes back to the infield? Yeah, I don't know. He can play all over. That's certainly a help to his value. He hits the ball hard. He consistently puts the ball in play. I think Merrill at this point, to me, looks like a top 50 dynasty asset, and he's going to be there in my rankings that I update this week, just really buying the profile, buying everything that he's done, and thinking there's only room to grow at this point.
Yeah, he was right around 100 for me last update, but yeah, he's definitely going to rise up a good amount. I don't think he'll ever reach like top 30, 40 levels, but yeah, could he settle in as like a top 50 asset? Absolutely, especially if he's going to be 280, 20 home, 25 home runs, 15 to 20 steals, something like that, probably with a decent amount of runs in RBI as well. Probably moves up in the order moving forward. Yeah, I think top 50 is definitely in play there for Jackson Merrill. And same thing, and even maybe more so for Jaron Duran from the Boston Red Sox, who's also on a little bit of a power surge here over the last, his isn't as recent, but over the last, you know, quarter of a season, I think the first 40 or so games, he had one home run, though he was still playing well. But the last 40, 45 games, he has 8 home runs, up to 9 home runs and 20 steals now, with a 288, 350, 491 slash line. And another profile that looks pretty damn good across the board, obviously. He's one of the more elite runners in all of baseball. He had 24 steals last year, 20 so far this year, 94th percentile sprint speed. A guy that also has above average quality of contact across the board, even a little bit better than Merrill's. 91.4 average EV, 8.5% barrel, 46.5% hard hit rate, which is pretty similar to where he was last year. Trimmed the K rate again this year. He's trimmed it every year of his career, and the walk rate's gone up every year of his career as well. But that's great to see. And the guy that's making pretty solid contact, above 85% zone each of the last 2 years. Now, overall, he's been right in that 76 or so percent range, which is pretty solid there. He's doing a lot of things well. And you know, look at his spray chart, Chris. Terms, he's talking about the Merrill's. It's funny. Duran, all of his doubles besides one have been to center or left field. He loves the monster. He's hit so many doubles off that monster this year. All of his home runs are center to right, and he's got some triples out there as well. But yeah, all of his doubles basically are to center or left field. Guy that just uses Fenway Park to his advantage, uses that speed. He can hit for average. He can hit vis-a-vis 15 to 18 home runs, 35 to 40 steals, a good average, and plenty of runs. Like, he's on pace for about 112 runs or so. man, there's a lot to like here, Jaren Duran. So I have Duran top 50 now. I have him ahead of Merrill. And Duran could maybe even get to the top 35 to 40 range here with, you know, the all-around skill set that he's showing right now. So, yeah, just as a fantasy analyst and as a Red Sox fan, I've been very much impressed with Duran this year. So very happy to see what he's doing right now.
Yeah, what Duran brings is, on top of all that, it's really good speed, which is helpful. He's pacing to steal 30 bases easily. He swiped 24 last year in 362 plate appearances. If he wants to run, he can run. There's no question about that. And you look at the profile, it's pretty well rounded overall. It's been nice to see him consistently, you know, hit the ball harder and taking that big jump this year. Barrel rate's up. The barrel rate's still, it's above league average, but it's not great. But at the end of the day, it'll play. He lifts the ball enough. Fly ball rate's a little lower than you'd like, but he still lifts it. And that's, I think, pretty notable for Duran. And on top of everything else, as you mentioned, the contact skills are really good. It's a good hard hit rate. He's making that consistently hard contact. And at the end of the day, like I said, just get on base and run, man. It's he makes enough contact in the zone. The overall contact rate, really good. You know, similar to Jackson Merrill, good meatball swing rate. Like, he's consistently identifying pitches over the heart and hitting them. But the opposite of Jackson Merrill, 23% first pitch swing rate. That's 10% below the league average, but that's okay. Still making it work. And I think that when you provide the value that Duran has with the bat and on the bases is huge. I'll say the biggest improvement with Jaren Duran this year is his glove. His glove has been massive improvement. And that also is going to help him stick in the lineup regularly. Not that he wasn't anyway, but that fact is massively important now that he's just so much better in the field. I think that's the most notable thing to talk about.
Yeah, no, he is so much fun to watch everywhere, in the box, on the base paths, in the center field. Red Sox fans always love, everybody does, but you know, we've had so many good defensive center fielders that can just go out and get it. The two, obviously, that come to mind, Jacoby Ellsbury and Jackie Bradley Jr., having a guy like Duran and also a guy like Cezanne Rafael, like these types of guys are just always, people fall in love with them here in Boston and become fan favorites. And yeah, Jaren Duran absolutely is becoming a fan favorite here in Boston with how he's played. And yeah, I have him top 50 right now. I think he's definitely warranted that type of jump in the rankings. Last major leaguer here before we get back to the minor leagues with three up, three down is Tristan McKenzie. Just got optioned to AAA today with Gavin Williams coming back. Finally, felt like he was, you know, rehabbing for the last 6 months now, it felt like. But McKenzie has just been terrible this year. There's no better way to put that. In 16 starts, 5.11 ERA, 1.56 WHIP, with a 14.4% walk rate, which is the highest in the league, and a 21.8% K rate. And it wasn't like there was any bad luck, as the ERA indicators were all up there, ERA maybe even higher. He had a 5.48 xERA. Just getting, was walking too many guys and getting hit too hard. And that's the kind of a synopsis of the profile here. 13% barrel rate and a 14.4% walk rate. That's not good. And it really is the fastball. The curveball and slider are actually both pretty good this year. Curveball, 176 batting average against, slider, 143. Both have a whiff rate right above 37%. But the four-seamer, which is his only other pitch and the one he throws over half the time, at 91.1 miles an hour, which is down 1.3 from last year, has a 303 batting average against, 652 slug, 463 wOBA, and higher expected set metrics on all three of those. So it's just a very poor fastball. This is speculation that he might be hurt or something like that. I don't know. I don't want to speculate on that. But it's looking at the performance, it's terrible. The fastball is terrible. And that's huge. I don't know if this will help him. I'm pretty much out. I've pretty much been out for a while, so I wouldn't even look to buy low. But I don't know, Chris, do you have more faith in McKenzie here than I do? Would you be looking to buy low in Dynasty right now?
Nope. I'm
nope.
Majorly concerned with what we've seen this year. Just across the board, it's been not good at all. And yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on. Obviously, things look really bad. I have zero interest right now in buying, and he's going to consistently just tank his value in dynasty rankings, in my opinion. Pitch locations are terrible. The pitches in general are not working at all. Like, it's pretty fascinating, actually, that his curve and slider have, you know, 37% whiff rates each, because the locations on them are all over the place. It's just like slider's just so inconsistent with where he's landing it. And I'm not sure how he's doing it, but yeah, it's just weird. The fastball drop in velo is obviously pretty notable too. And I won't speculate, but things aren't looking so good right now. And I'd rather just not. Yeah, obviously got option, probably dropped in a lot of leagues, if we're being honest, but I have zero interest.
Yep. I'm definitely with you there. All right, let's head on over to three up, three down with some hitting prospects this week. Our first up is CJ Kafis, first base prospect with the Cleveland Guardians, who's been really hitting well all season, but obviously we focus on like the last week or two here in this segment. And he's got four home runs and three doubles over the last week and a half or so, the last nine games. And this season overall, 61 games, 21 of those have been double A, 40 in high A. He was breaking out in high A, 338, 437, 578, seven home runs in 40 games. Double A, he's been just as good, maybe even better. K-Rick's gone up a little bit, but 333, 433, 667 slash with six home runs. And even, we don't care about RBI, but 23 RBI in 21 games as well. Walk rate's around 12.5%. Right now, Kafis, Chris, obviously good OBP skills, a little bit of pop there, solid contact skills. How high do you think is appropriate to move him up prospect rankings right now? Because I've seen some push him even higher. Like I have him close to top 50 overall right now. Not really ready to go higher than that, but he's been really impressive at both levels so far.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/Ross Patterson or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/Ross Patterson.
For me, he's like back in top 100. It's interesting profile, and it shows that I think he's the kind of profile that kind of defies like what the EVs say, because the EVs are like more average power, but he lifts the ball well and he pulls the ball well. So he's getting to the power in the standpoint of this. He's just pulling fly balls. It's the Isak Paredes kind of model, and it's working. Kafis is obviously, he wasn't a big power guy in college. Like the EVs were just okay. And I don't think that even Cleveland expected this kind of power outburst from him. But I'm interested to see, because the numbers have been even better in double A, like from the standpoint of like the slash line, he's got an 1100 OPS, 333 average. Contact rates dropped 10 percentage points since he moved to double A. So I am keeping an eye on this because, yeah, obviously it's notable. He should have mashed in high A, given he's a college bat. That's the expectation. He exceeded expectations, I'll say. But you have the expectation that a good college bat should perform at the lower levels. It's a very BABIP-driven profile, 391 in high A, 413 in double. Yeah, I think the average comes down. Not to say that he's not a good hitter, but I do think that there's the potential for the average to take a hit a bit. And I'm not sure if the power is going to be consistent. So I'm a little more hesitant just given the fact the underlying data is just not fully supportive, but you can't argue with what he's done. Kafis is 22, he's in double A, and he's hitting the ball extremely well. Like from a performance standpoint, one of the best in the minor leagues. So I can't argue that, but I can't argue that I think that he will regress. Maybe he's a sell high right now. It's Cleveland's got a lot of guys that are this kind of type profile at this point at the corner, which is weird. It's not really problem they've had. They've always had so many middle infielders, but now all of a sudden they've got a lot of first base only profiles. How does it shake out? Thing is still to be determined. I like Kafis. I'm not really all in on him at this point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought he was more of a sell high. So sounds like you think he is, and I can say that too. I think he's been being pushed up pretty high. I have him 70 overall right now. I feel fine with that. Yeah. So what you have him more back in top 100, you said, Chris?
Yeah, I don't even think I have him in the top 100 yet, but I'm working on the update, and I think he'd be like 90 to 110 range probably.
Okay, that's fair. This is a fair range for him. He's a first base guy, doesn't run, so he needs the bat to be there. And I think the bat can be decent, but I don't think it's going to be like an impact standout bat at the same time either. But definitely on the rise right now this season. And been one of the bigger risers up rankings overall this year for sure. The next player, which almost 100% certain, I guess actually I can guarantee it, will be featured on 3 Up, 3 Down probably, 6 weeks ago as an up, and now he's a down, is Jay Allen II from the Cincinnati Reds. He's been really been something here hard for a few weeks. Only has a couple of hits over the last few weeks here. So, Chris, what do we want to believe? Because the last couple of seasons for Jay Allen were pretty bad. Like, he was a really fun prospect coming out of the draft, pretty toolsy, and had a good debut back in 2021 at the complex. But then low A, high A in 2022, he was bad. Again, in high A in 2023, he was even worse. 154 slash line in 25 games in high A last year. So he's repeating the level. This is his third year at high A. And again, he got off to a really hot start. His slump over the last several weeks has pushed him down to 249 on the season. But he still has a near 400 OBP, 9 home runs, 19 steals, and 233 plate appearances. Was the first several weeks of the season from him just a hot streak, a mirage, you think? Or was there some legitimacy there? Is this the real Jay Allen? He's a hard one. He's a fun player, but a hard one to rank right now.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Allen was that the exit velocity data was really good. He was making really good contact early in the year. And so that's what I'm struggling to peg down. It's been a massive shift from what he's done and what went wrong here, because he collected his first hit in 15 days yesterday. Like, he had a single yesterday. That'd be Saturday when we're recording this on Sunday. But he hadn't had a hit prior to that since June 15th. And that's rough to look at and see. But at the end of the day, it's been a tale of two seasons for him so far, where he was really good. And he had a point in early May where it's just like all went downhill, which part of me, I would have to do a little more digging on this, because he missed 3 games between May 7th and May 10th. And I don't know, like, this is the first time just like seeing this, but that's where the downfall started happening. Since May the 10th, it's a 179 average with a 309 slug and a 24% K rate. So before that, obviously he was hitting the snot out of the ball, but it's okay. Something between here, because before it was 387, 500, 694 slash 18% K. So he'd been really good up to that point. And then he missed 3 days. Now I'm going to go down a rabbit trail to try to figure out, like, was there something that happened?
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely been a tale of two seasons so far for Jay Allen. Definitely trending down.
Yeah, it seems like something might have happened. Just he was so damn good. We're like, all right, this is the Jay Allen we've been hoping to see over the last couple of years. And then he has reverted back to the bad Jay Allen that he was in 2022 and 2023. So, yeah, he's a really fun prospect, has the power, speed, and obviously it's Cincinnati waiting for him if he makes it that far and becomes a regular. It's a pretty fun profile here, but, yeah, it's been a rough last several weeks here for Jay Allen. Our second up here, going to Houston with Shea Whitcomb, a guy that's made a massive jump up prospect rankings this year. And you look at over the last, really the last, since the start of 2021, this was a week or two ago I looked at this, so maybe it's changed, but I don't think anyone else was close. He was the only prospect in the minor leagues with 80-plus home runs and 80-plus steals. So I think Pedro Leon, his teammate, was only at 6 or 7 home runs off. But this year in AAA, 319, 398, 581 slash line. And what's really encouraging as well is the drop in strikeout rate. He was 28 to 32 or so percent every level, every year so far. Down to 21.7% so far this year with 11.2% walk rate. Both of those are career best marks. And he's got 18 home runs, 18 steals in just 73 games. I'm starting to think, Chris, that we see Whitcomb pretty soon here. It's not a clear opening for him at this moment, but he can play. I think he's played first, was it still second, third, and short this year. Primarily a shortstop, but also played so second and third as well. So maybe he can come up in a super utility role. But it's really encouraging to see the walk rate and K rate improvements this year while still having that nice power-speed blend. So I think he's a pretty fun profile, and I think he's still very undervalued overall. I think you can get him for a pretty reasonable price tag right now in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, we're talking about somebody last year hit 35 homers and stole 20 bases. So that's between double and triple A. Like, he wasn't just doing this at low levels. So it's right. That's pretty impressive itself. Obviously, the K rate was a massive concern. It was 28% in double and 31% in triple. But this year in triple, 21.7%. That's huge. The contact rates are still questionable. It's 69% overall, which is fine. But he makes up for it because 83% in zone will absolutely play here. I like to see that. It's a league average chase rate. He hits the ball hard and he lifts the ball. It's a 106 mile an hour 90th. It's plus power. And it's evident. I know he's hitting the PCL, but the exit velocities back the power. It's not like he's just benefited from being in the Texas League in double and then the PCL in triple. It's actual legit power here that we're looking at when we look at this profile. So, you know, I think that certainly Whitcomb should be on radars. He's somebody that I was really high on at one point, and then when I saw him in Asheville, actually, back in 2021, it was a really fun profile. And I was like, all right, maybe there's some legitimacy here. And then he had some struggles and dropped him. He fell out of ranks. Whitcomb is really good. Last year, only two other hitters went 30-20. It was Weston Wilson and Trey Cabbage. So obviously not like the big names by any means as far as prospects went. He is someone that I think could be a really solid prospect. So I think he'd come up. I think he can probably surprise some people. So I'm pretty interested.
Yeah, as am I. And I was right there with you. I was pretty eyeing him a couple of years ago, cooled off a bit the last 2 years or so. But again, just really encouraged by the improvements he's made this year while maintaining that power speed blend. I have no idea where he ends up on the diamond in Houston. Could be anyone of really any infield position outside of first base and catcher. But maybe he's a guy that has dual or even try eligibility. I think that's possible as well. That adds a bit more value to his name as well. And if he's hitting regularly in Houston's lineup in that ballpark, that's, we've seen lesser talents thrive in Houston's lineup and park. So yeah, pretty high in Whitcomb. And again, he's very reasonable price tag right now. Next down is a duo here, but they link together here with Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas with the San Diego Padres. Ethan Salas here at high A has not been hitting well this year. Overall, 197, 304, 275 in 270 plate appearances with just one home run and 5 for 26 with a 35.5% K rate over the last 10 days, 192, 323, 231. And then DeVries over the last 10 days, 167, 324, 300. Does have one home run, but five hits and also a 35% K rate in 37 plate appearances overall. And then this year in low A, this is a guy that skipped both DSL and complex. It is slashing just 190, 317, 307. With one home run and 183 plate appearances. So obviously these guys are both still extremely young in general and especially for the level they're currently at, respectively. But this brings the question up of how are we valuing these young guys, Chris, struggling at levels that they are very young for? And San Diego has tried this a few times and yet worked out a little bit in the past for them. It's also hit them pretty hard this year. So what are you making of all this with DeVries and Salas?
I think some of the struggles should be expected. When you look at, obviously, Prellers are going to do things that sometimes don't make sense. When you look at Leo DeVries, he would most likely not be eligible for the summer's draft, which if he was a prep player. You know, probably going into his senior year, unless he reclassified, because his birthday's in October, meaning that he would be going into his senior year of high school right now. So put that in perspective. I think about like how many juniors in high school could even get a bat on the ball in single A right now. And, you know, I think that it's probably pretty few. There's some positives in the profile with Leo DeVries, and he's lifting the ball. I'll take that as a positive. He's a very low ground ball rate. Obviously, he's not gotten the power, but it's still a young kid that's got all the upside in the world. He is striking out too much. You want to see more contact. I'd like to see that improve. But again, like, how much are we going to critique a high school junior here that's right, semi holding his own? He's got a 67% contact rate. Like, okay, that'll play if it gets better. I don't know. I'm interested. I think that this may be creating an opportunity to buy low on DeVries, because I think that at the end of the day, it's like, he's got all the talent in the world. He's going to struggle. His value may go even lower, which is crazy, but I think that's the case just because he's way outmatched right now. Salas also, he just turned 18 earlier this month, so that's worth noting too. But given how well he performed last year, it's like, all right, we should expect a little more. The underlying data was much better last year than this year, and we're seeing some kind of regression in a sense, and I don't know what to make of it. I think that, again, it should be expected. He's still so young, but at the end of the day, you'd like to see a little more from Ethan Salas, given that it is his second year in the minors. But again, he's so young. You got to give these guys a shot, where I think a good buy low on both could be in order. And yeah, they rightfully have to move down rankings. There's no question that they need to move down. But I do think that you can probably go out and acquire him for pretty cheap right now, just given how bad both have been.
If you had to buy low on one of these two, given where you believe their respective price tags would be at this point in time, which one would you rather pony up to buy low on?
Probably DeVries, just because he's, you know, more of a wild card. We're still talking, like, if you pull up MLB Pipeline, like, where do they have Ethan Salas ranked? He was like top 10 during the year. He's still got to be, they don't update. He's still ranked four. So people are going to look at that. Oh man, still fourth ranked prospect. So I think the opportunity to buy is just better on DeVries, just given that public list is like, yeah, they're still astronomically high on Ethan Salas, which affects his value a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with DeVries being the better buy low here. People know that I've been very vocal on Salas was way overranked for fantasy. And at this point, my next update upcoming here, there's a better than 50% chance that he's not even going to be in my top 100 overall. I still think he could, obviously there's some talent there, and I think he could be a solid player long-term, but I don't think there's a major impact fantasy player to be out here, and he's a catcher. So those don't rank super high in my rankings regardless. Yeah, I guess some guys high, like Augustin Ramirez, Samuel Basayo, guys like that, and a few others, Harry Ford, etc. But Salas has been, he's a guy that even when people had him top 20, top 25 for fantasy, I think I had him like in the 60s, and he's just been steadily, every time I look at it, it's just like, all right, let's move him down a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, get to the point where he's probably in the 110 range for me next update. And then people might scoff at that, but that's where I think his value is now. And DeVries has a much, you know, better fantasy profile, at least projected fantasy profile, so I would much rather take the or do the buy low on DeVries than Ethan Salas. Last up here, stick in the NL West, go to the Dodgers with Emil Morales. They just signed and assigned to the DSL this year, and it's just been 18 games. The numbers have been loud. The feedback has been loud. Like, everything you hear about Morales has been loud, and loud in a good way. So far, 82 plate appearances, 339, 463, 600, five doubles, four home runs. He had back-to-back games the other day, a few days ago, with two home runs each game, three steals, 15 walks to 19 strikeouts. Has that big, projectable frame that we love to dream on there. Chris, I know, and you've been very vocal on Twitter as well about Emil Morales. I think we could be looking at maybe even a top 10 prospect, maybe not by the end of this year, but I think he could be easily a top 25 prospect by the end of this year, and maybe by this time next year, he's in that top 10, top 5 discussion. I think that's really the level of upside that Morales has.
He chases a lot, which is my concern. It's a 40% chase rate. He's swinging at everything, which, yeah, I take the DSL data with a grain of salt because there's right. weird things that goes on. A lot of it is sadly not accurate, and you just don't know. You can't trust. Some teams turn up the track, man, like you're getting like these absurd exit velocities, which I'm not sitting here going to tell you that's the case with Morales, because I've been pounding the table on Morales, and I think that he is legit, and I think that we've seen him coming around more and more, which is really encouraging that he's steadily improving as the year's gone on. Last I looked, he's been on base every game that he's played this year. I want to confirm that that's still the case. No, he broke that on 625. There's a doubleheader in one of the games he did not get on base. But you know, he's been on base in, let's see, 17 of 18 games. So that's pretty good. And over the last three games, it's four homers and three doubles. The strikeouts have been improving majorly. One strikeout in the last five games. And people were concerned about the strikeouts early on through the first five games. I know that's even crazy to sit here and say through the first five games, but that's exactly what people were doing. Through the first five games, people were like, oh my gosh, this guy struck out nine times. 37.5% K rate. Not good. It was five games. Like, who cares? It was the first five games of his career for a 17-year-old. So I think that Morales is going to be fine. I think back to like Yoenndry Vargas last year. That's the kind of rise I think Morales can make. 6'3", athletic shortstop. It's a good swing. It's easy loft and power. He's going to get on base. And the walk rate, take it with a grain of salt, because Eric and I could go to the DSL and stand in the box and never swing and probably walk 5 of 10 times. Just being realistic. Just the reality of the situation. So the walk rate, I would not even think about that. I don't know what it's going to be when he comes stateside, but I guess it's sub 10% given how much he swings in the chase rate. But if you put the ball in play and you hit it hard, things are going to happen. And yeah, I think Morales is on that kind of Yoenndry Vargas track where I think he can be pretty, pretty good. And I think now might be the time to invest in him.
Yeah, it's funny. We definitely could walk a few times in the DSL. I will say when I was playing baseball up through high school, I was a guy that walked a good amount of times. I still have my old high school buddy that was a catcher that still jokes to this day that he has knee problems because of all the times he had when I was pitching a little bit. I didn't pitch much, but all the balls in the dirt that he had the block of mine. But I did walk a good amount, so maybe I'll get a walk or two down in the DSL. But yeah, Morales definitely has that massive upside. Won't even be 18 until basically near the end of the season, late September. So, yeah, definitely one to go out and get now while the price tag. It's already risen, but I think it's going to rise a lot more here over the next couple of months to round up the season. The last down, we're going with Ryan Clifford, who hasn't been doing that great really the entire season. Was a guy that was a pretty big riser last year when he was in the Houston Astros organization, but ever since he went over to the New York Mets, it's been a real different story. Last year, let's look at high A here for Houston. He had 58 games, 250 plate appearances, 271, 356, 547, 16 home runs. Traded to the Mets, so also high A, 140 plate appearances, 188, 307, 376, with a 36.5% K rate. Like, all right, it wasn't a super big sample size, was traded. He was only 19 years old. You give him not a pass, but I didn't really drop him too far down my rankings. But this year, just been more of the same. At high A, he slashed 216, 412, 304. So he's still walking a ton, 23.5% at that level for that 412 OBP. But the power basically evaporated this year, K rate above 30%. And then double A, power's returned. 9 home runs in 37 games, but only hitting 175 at the level. So it's a mixed bag here, Chris, and he's only 2-for-24 over the last 10 days. Obviously struggling right now, as he has most of the season. Where are you at on Clifford at this point? Obviously been pretty rough for almost a full calendar year now. Would you still be looking to buy low? Is there some hope there that you're seeing, or are you out at this point?
I always expressed the concern after seeing him last year. Brooklyn was in Greenville to end the year last year, and he showed some major whiff concerns against breaking balls, and I didn't think he was all that impressive with the bat. Yeah, it's big power. Sure, that's great to see. Yeah, and then obviously the fact that in Brooklyn, your home games, you're going to be suppressed power-wise. The wind really blows in there. And so that was certainly a factor to think about. It's like, all right, is this guy not hitting home runs because of that? And yeah, he's hit a couple of home runs since going to Double A, but also the contact rate's tanked. It's even lower. It's 64% so far in a small Double A sample. And in High A, it was 68%. So there's still some concerns going with Ryan Clifford and what was going on in the profile. Now, I think that we're seeing some regression to who he is. Not that he's a 178 hitter, which he's been over the course of this year. I think he's better than that. He last year in 2023, it was a 242 average, though, with 22 homers, 338 OBP. So he's always going to run higher OBPs. I think it's fair at this point to question who is Clifford. He's limited to a corner spot. Like, he's going to be most likely a first baseman, which means there's pressure on the bat. Like, the bat is going to, have to play. I know he's played the outfield. He's played some left and right, but this is a first base profile, like, for being honest. And I think that we need to see a little more with the hit tool. The power is okay. He can get to power. He's going to get on base, but hit tool gives me some pause right now. And I'd like to see him really improve against breaking balls.
Yeah, I'm not out on Clifford. I mean, there's still some skills there, some OBP skills, some power. But I've dropped him way down my rankings. Would I buy low? Yeah, price has dropped a ton, more than likely. So I'm not opposed to it. But yeah, definitely a lot to work on there with Clifford before he's back to the level we saw him at last year. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks, all the listeners, for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.